With our guest this hour, Paul Ramosh, we're going to take your phone calls with him when we come right back. Next up, we'll ask him about ghosts and crime scenes on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Paul, has a ghost or a creature or anything ever followed a crime scene investigator home?
Well, it has. And when I was on last year, we told the story of a colleague of mine, Mitch, who that actually happened to. And I also talked about his pug named the Dude and how it was his dog's strange behavior in looking around and acting bizarre and barking at corners that really kind of cued him to that fact. And so last year when we talked about the Dude, we probably have to do a little update on him because I'm afraid that celebrity has kind of gone to the Dude's head after he was so featured so prominently on your show. He has his own Facebook page now, and he's also gotten quite fat. The celebrity has really gone to his head. So if anyone wants to see some pictures of how large the Dude has become, go to my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/theloststones, and I've posted some pictures of the Dude and how large he's gone. You know how it is, George. You live in L.A., and celebrity goes to people's heads sometimes.
You see that all the time, don't you, out here?
And that's the Dude. And so what's interesting is, you know, we talked about that story last time, and people need to become a StreamLink member, right? And listen to last year's story about that. But a ghost did follow Mitch home, and he during the investigation of the of this woman's murder, Mitch kind of psychically reached out to her and said, okay, in his mind, he said, all right, tell me what happened to you. Tell me what happened to you while he was investigating it. So we figure that's kind of why she latched onto it. But we have a funny story with Mitch that's happened since that shows that a ghost actually followed him to a crime scene. And so what happened there is when Mitch moved into a new house, he moved away from the house that this girl was visiting, this murdered girl. He once again, the Dude started to act a little weird, looking at a room that Mitch made his library. And, you know, they didn't think too much about it. And the home actually belonged to Mitch's grandfather, who passed away, and then Mitch bought it and remodeled it. Well, at his Halloween party, and Mitch throws a great Halloween party every year, a girl came who was an intuitive and said, you know, Mitch, your grandpa really likes what you've done to the house. And like, oh, and that started a conversation that the grandfather is still there in the house. And, you know, we talked earlier tonight about, you know, people who die in a house, do they linger?
They like it.
They do. And it was, he loved that house and he stayed on, and he really likes the library for some reason. And the Dude, when he's eating his food, and if you go to my Facebook page and see him, you'll see that he eats food all the time. When he eats his food, he gets really protective and kind of looks into the library and growls. And so they kind of accepted it that, okay, this grandpa's here at the house. Well, one day Mitch responded to a crime scene at a new age shop, where they sell crystals and incense and different things, but they also do psychic readings at this store. And it was a burglary. Someone cut the phone line to disable the alarm and went through a window and stole a cash box from a desk, you know, pretty simple breaking and entering kind of thing. And while he was processing the crime scene for fingerprints, testing for prints, these two girls came into the store to get a psychic reading. And one of the workers at the store took them back into a room and to begin their psychic reading. And, you know, Mitch didn't think anything of it, and he's just working. After a few minutes, the worker who was going to do the psychic reading came out and asked the other worker there, hey, do you think you could help me out a little bit? I can't really concentrate. I'm having trouble focusing on this reading. And then this worker who was having trouble kind of noticed the officers there, and she said, well, wait a minute. Did one of you guys have like a father maybe who passed away recently? And they kind of joked and said, well, no, you know, I talked to my dad this morning, and he, you know, as far as I know, he didn't die. And the girl kind of goes, well, what about a grandfather? And then when she said grandfather, she pointed right at Mitch. And Mitch is like, yeah, my grandfather died. And she said, does he really like fishing? And Mitch was like, well, yeah, actually, that's all he did. He couldn't get enough of fishing and went all the
Yeah.
time. And she said, oh, okay, that makes sense because he's back in the room here. He's back here where I'm trying to do the psychic reading, and
Hanging around.
he's hanging around. And Mitch is taken aback a little bit, and he's like, well, or the worker said, he's not being rude. He's just really curious about what's going on. But the trouble is all I hear is a fly reel clicking.
He's doing
And
his spin casting, huh?
right, and that's what he loved to do. Mitch's grandfather was an avid fly fisherman, and so Mitch is really embarrassed at this point, and he's done with his investigation, and so he says, well, I'm sorry, I'm almost done. And she goes, well, it's okay, don't feel bad, just ask him to leave. And so Mitch gets his equipment stowed and walks out, and he's really embarrassed, but kind of shocked at what happened. And he just says to his grandfather, presumably aside, I can't take you anywhere, can I, Grandpa? And then said, you cannot follow me to work. And it was just a funny story that, Mitch had one follow him home, but also one follow him to a crime scene.
I'm going to ask you about what these ghosts might be, Paul, in a second. Let's take some calls. We'll go to Dave in Asheville, North Carolina, to get things started. First time caller. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
Yeah, I'm in law enforcement. I've been doing it about 20 years now. And if you want to know about 100 places, talk to a cop because they'll let you
They
know where they are.
know everything about these things.
Yeah. But when I used to work down in Eastern North Carolina also, and there's a bunch of stuff up here in the western part. Joshua P. Warren could probably tell you that there, George.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we used to have a little town I worked in down there. Voodoo was a real big thing. And what they would do is they would cast these things called roots. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yes. RUNES, right?
They call them roots. It sounded like you're like a tree root.
Oh,
They call them
roots.
roots.
Okay. Not
You're right.
runes. Okay.
That's how they would do their spells or call spirits and stuff. That's what they said they did. They would throw chicken bones, things like that.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we got a call to a frequent flyer. I'm at his house. It was a noise complaint. And I'm just go there. I'm trying to tell the guy, hey, you're keeping your neighbors up. How about you turn your stuff down? Anyhow, he starts like telling me I need to be watch out and stuff because he can call spirits and cause me problems.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm like, okay. Anyhow, he starts chanting, and all of a sudden, like the curtains and stuff in his room that we're in, we're like in the main living room. It's a small house, like
Yeah.
they call them shotgun houses. The curtains start like moving, like there's a breeze, like little papers and stuff start kind of fluttering around, like there's a breeze, but the wind's still.
And there's no
And
fan on, nothing like
there's
that.
nothing. No, there wasn't going on. Nothing. None of that was happening until he started doing his little chanting things. And I remember I looked at him. I went, well, that's okay, because my God's much more powerful than anything you got here. But that, because I'm a Christian. And everything stopped
Oh,
right
really?
then. Right. I mean, it just
Well,
stopped
you
dead.
might be right then.
And, well, the funny part about it was that he looked at me like he was scared to death. And all, because, I mean, it's like, also, I caught him midstream, and he just, wasn't working anymore. And I told him, okay, you have a good night. Never had a problem with the guy again. What's funny is some of the other practitioners of the voodoo in the area, they all started treating me with a lot of respect, which I thought was kind of interesting.
You had that ability. You tapped into it.
Apparently, show them who's
and
boss.
up here we have there's several haunted places. We had an alarm call this one place, and we go in. I get this young officer with me. We're checking out because we had an open door, and we're doing a clearing of the building. And then all of a sudden, we're into one back area. All of a sudden, it sounds like about 40 or 50 people just started screaming, like on the other side of the wall. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning in this church.
Yeah, and clearly you can hear this.
Oh, it sounded like literally 30, 40 people just screaming.
Yeah.
And I remember I looked at him. I said, "Did you hear that?" He was like, "No." And I could never get him back in the building again.
Wow.
But yeah, we like I said, if you want to talk about haunted places, find a cop
I
because they
love
all know
that.
where they are.
Love that story, Paul. What do you think these ghosts are, Paul, in your opinion? What are they?
I believe they're the spirits of people who've died and gone on. It's part of my belief system that every human has a spirit and a soul, and I don't know. I don't know why some pass on to the next realm and some stick around, but yeah, I believe that they are spirits. And it's interesting that the caller talked about alarms because responding to an alarm at a place, because that's a very common theme that officers will respond to a burglar alarm, And when they go in, then something bizarre happens. That's a very common element in a lot of the stories.
Well, like his rookie, a police officer, do some get so scared they won't go in these places?
I would say so. One of the stories that I recently got in kind of preparation from the show is from an officer named Mike. And another very kind of common thing that law enforcement officers will do is when they're working a night shift, especially in a rural area, they'll go someplace kind of quiet and out of the way to type their report or to eat their lunch or something like that, just to take a little break. And they want to pull kind of out of view of everyone so they don't get bothered, so they can have a little break. And so one officer that I know named Mike, he was patrolling a very, very rural mountainous area here in Weber County. And it was in the middle of the winter, and those shifts are really dead, not to use a pun, but it's really dead. There's not a lot going on. And so he pulled down a road by a cemetery. In fact, it is called Cemetery Point. And so he was doing his report. He had his laptop in his car, and while he was typing, all of a sudden he felt eyes glaring on him. He knew somebody was staring at him. And just a gut intuition. And so he flipped down the screen on his laptop so he could try to get his night vision back. And as soon as his eye started to adjust to the dark, a mist, clear as day, floated just right over the top of his hood pretty fast. And it was a clear night. There wasn't clouds or fog or anything. Just this mist went over. And at that point, he said he slammed the car in drive and took off and didn't look back. Because it was so disconcerting to him that it happened.
Next up, we go to Frank. He's at the JFK Airport. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
Good morning. I hope you hear me pretty good. I work here at JFK.
Uh-huh.
And I work in a pretty large building. And on the 4th of July, I go upstairs on my break. I'm taking a little nap on the sofa. And I felt the figure go through me. In the building, it's been reported by some of the cleaning people. They've seen apparitions and ghosts in the last 5 years upstairs. And I go back. I thought nothing of it. And it happened again. And I know it wasn't a dream. I've dreamt a million times. It's supposed to go right through me. So I come downstairs. My break is over, okay? And I see the cleaning lady. She comes downstairs to hand in some keys. And she looks at me, and I look at her, and I say, "Bumps." She had saw it going towards where I was taking my nap. And that's my ghost story.
They're everywhere, Paul.
They are, and the more you talk to people, the more stories you collect.
I've heard a lot of stories about ghost children. Why do they seem to be so prevalent?
That's a really good question, because I think the tragedy surrounding a child's death is one of the most acute forms of sadness that
horribly sad
we can have.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe it's the unfulfilled promise. Maybe they don't understand. Maybe as a child, when you pass through the veil to the other side, you don't realize it. And maybe you don't move on. Maybe they lack that understanding. And so it is a very good question.
Next up, let's go to Jan, Ogden, Utah. Hey, Jan, go ahead. You're in a haunted area.
I am. And so, of course, I'm in Weber County also. I have a story, actually up two, but I probably only have time for one.
You have time for one good one. Go ahead.
My father always told our family about the house that he grew up in was haunted. And when my aunt moved into that same house to take care for my grandfather, and she had a little.
Yeah, let's get your phone working a little bit, Jan. Your phone's breaking up on me. You still there?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
She had a little girl named Charlene, and they called her Cha-Cha. And Cha-Cha could always be heard talking to somebody, and, you know, and they just said, oh, it's her imaginary friend, you know. And one day, Cha-Cha came in to her mother, and she said, "Mommy, Winnie-Mary and I want a glass of soda." And so she said, "Oh, is that right?" And so she gave her two glasses of 7-Up, and she took it out, and she heard Cha-Cha laughing and everything. Pretty soon, she came back in, and my aunt said, "So how did Winnie Mary like the soda?" And she said, "Well, she'd never tasted it before, but she said it tickled her nose." And then another day, she came in, and she said, "Mommy, can I have a hat like Winnie Mary's?" And she said, "Well, what's Winnie Mary's hat like?" And she described a old-fashioned poke sunbonnet.
Like the 1800s?
Yeah. And then another day, she wanted boots that were like Winnie Mary's, and she described the old hook and button latch boots.
Oh, man, she was seeing something.
Yeah, and then another day, it was the pioneer-style dress. And she said this little girl's name was Winnie Mary Fort. So my aunt decided she was going to do a little investigating, and she asked the oldest person that lived in that town if there was ever a family that lived in the house named Fort.
Here we come.
And he said, "No, but there was a family that was named Ford." And she said, "Okay."
Close enough.
They said, "Did they have a little girl named Winnie Mary?" And he said, "No, but they had one named Winnie Mary."
That's it.
Uh-huh. And she said, "What happened to her?" And he said, "Well, the family was in their buckboard, and they were going to cross the creek, and the horse got spooked and dumped them all into the creek, and they all drowned."
Oh, my God.
So, well,
tragedies, the tragedies. It's the tragedies, Paul, that keep them coming back sometimes, isn't it?
Yep, it seems like it. There's definitely a connection.
Jeez. And it's sad, though.
It is. And, you know, once again, you know, there's the death of a child. And, yeah, what can be more tragic to a family or even a community than an untimely death of a young person?
Hey, why is Ogden, Utah spooky?
Well, Ogden has kind of a sordid past. I'm not sure where this quote comes from, but it's often said that when Al Capone visited Ogden once, he said it was too rough for him, and he felt nervous here. And a lot of it has to do with that it's a railroad town, and the way it was set up is that you couldn't travel from east to west or west to east coast without passing through Ogden. It was a railroad hub for the entire nation. And so right by the Union Station, there's a street called 25th Street, and it was filled with speakeasies and brothels. And it was just that street has had a bad, bad reputation for the longest time. My grandmother, who grew up in a neighboring city, Layton, always talked about how bad 25th Street was. And so there was lots of murders, lots of very shady stuff going on.
Bad energy all over the place.
It does. And so they do ghost tours down there, and now it's kind of a, you know, there's boutiques and nice restaurants. It's kind of been gentrified, but, you know, it has definitely a shady past.
All right. Well, we're coming back with final questions with Paul Ramosh, author of The Lost Stones, right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. Fire away. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you're a lover of animals, you will like next hour as Asia Voigt joins us. We'll talk about animal communications. And when we come right back with Paul Ramosh, we'll take final phone calls as we talk about law enforcement and ghosts on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, I suspect that evil entities might not be ghosts, but they may be like demons. What do you think?
Well, for sure. There's definitely evil out there, and a lot of times the law enforcement, people in law enforcement definitely believe in demons, because some of the things that you see, some of the cruelty and the barbarism that you see, that's almost what you can just chalk it up to. It just had just pure evil out there.
So do you continue doing what you're doing as a crime scene investigator and looking for the ghosts?
I do. And like I've mentioned, I wouldn't classify myself as a research or as a paranormal investigator.
Right.
I just really love the stories. And so, yeah, you know, my work keeps me busy, keeps me very preoccupied, but I'd love to talk to the officers and collect those stories. And we've talked about the deaths of children, and that reminded me of another story kind of related to an officer going and parking to do his report. And this one was told to me by an officer named John, who used to work back in Massachusetts in kind of a rural area out there. And one night he pulled down kind of this quiet street to take a break and catch up on paperwork. And he rolled down his windows, and he was on a street where there was a lot of reeds, very tall reeds. And as he was sitting there working, all of a sudden, right in the reeds next to him, and mind you, this is about 4 o'clock in the morning, right next to him, he hears a boy and a girl laughing, giggling. And it, once again, his subconscious just told him to get out of there.
Why are they giggling?
I don't know. That's one of those things in movies. It's so creepy when you have this ghostly child giggling, but it's real. That happens. So, I mean, you would almost say that to us it seems sinister, but I mean, those two children and ghosts were perhaps just playing or reenacting a pleasant time they had playing hide and seek out there or whatever. But if you hear that at 4 a.m. outside your car, you want to get out of there.
You got that right. First time caller, Kathleen in Redding, California. Good morning, Kathleen. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. I had a story. My husband killed himself back in April. And after that, my house never felt right. You know, it just felt like it had negative energy. And I called a priest who came in and blessed the house, and everything seemed fine for a couple of weeks. And then it started again. And I would see like a shadow of somebody walking behind me. My dogs would alert and bark at something in the hallway. Strange noises, strange smells, and I was getting very nervous. And so I called and made an appointment for a psychic to come cleanse my house. Well, before she could get there, the dogs woke me up one morning, and in fact, it was 3:45. They barked, and it woke me up, and I sat up and looked, and there was a man in my doorway. And this is what gives me the willies, is it was a man who was balding, and he was built heavily, which made the other story about the other woman just make my hair stand up on end.
That's the exact description.
He was scratching his head and kind of looking back and forth, like he didn't know which way in the hallway to go. And so I got back to my psychic saying, you know, I know you're on vacation, but I really need you here now. And she told me that by email, you know, they can scare you, but they can't hurt you. You just have to firmly tell them that they must go. Well, I have to say, I have never been so frightened in my life. I thought a man was in my doorway, and I reached over to grab my big flashlight to hit him and touch my touch lamp. The light went on, the dog stopped barking, and this man was gone. And I searched the whole house, and there was nobody here. And
similar to the story that I told.
It's the exact same thing. Well, when I did finally see her, and I'm trying to shorten up the story because I know you're short of time, she said she read the tarot cards for me, and that the card that came up is one called The Stranger, and that it's a man who is chubby and jovial and looking for a good time. And she thinks he was probably standing in the hallway scratching his head, wondering what the heck kind of bar this was, because he's looking for a good time. He doesn't mean any harm. And what I had done is I had some holy water left from the blessing of the house, didn't know what else to do, so was dancing up and down the hallway, throwing holy water around and saying, you can't stay here. You have to go home to heaven. You cannot be in this house. And I have to say, I've just never, ever been more frightened in my whole life. But this woman told me, she said, when she came and did whatever she does, that he's gone.
Could you feel that?
That he was gone?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I was so frightened every night until she got here. I don't know if anybody was here or not.
All right. Thanks for your story, Kathleen, and sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you. But she did come. She did cleanse the house, and since then, everything's calm. She said the reason for him to be there was probably because of my husband's death, my chakras were wide open. She says,
oh, you were like a portal, a walking portal.
Yeah. She said essentially what I was a nightlight in the window for any passing spirit.
come on in. That's right. Exactly. Hey, thank you. Appreciate your phone call. Paul, is there any place you won't go as an investigator?
Well, if it's part of the job, then I go. And so there's nothing really I can think of. You know, I mean, if we have to go in there for work, you go. But there's certainly places that you don't feel comfortable going. And, you know, a scene of a horrible crime, I mean, even if it's not haunted, for us it's very difficult because we have to go back day after day after day as we work these cases. And it's very, very taxing emotionally. And, you know, a lot of other members of law enforcement can move on from these, but we have to stick around on these scenes. And maybe that's what makes us susceptible. Maybe that's why a ghost followed Mitch home. Like Kathleen said, you know, different things in our life can open us up to that.
Yeah. Let's go to Richard in Walker County, Alabama. Hey, Richard, go ahead. Thanks for holding.
Hey, George, I've been a law enforcement officer 22 years. About 15 years ago on Thanksgiving night, it was, you know, been a rough weekend, rough holiday, and it was slow, middle of the night.
Right.
And I pulled off somewhere and fell asleep. And I was listening to Coast to Coast back in the old days. They were talking about demons, angels, something along those lines,
sure,
about Christmas. And I felt like somebody was shaking me, trying to wake me up. And you know how you nudge somebody to get them to leave you alone? Then I felt like somebody grabbed me by my shirt collar and my left sleeve and was rattling me around the inside of the car. I came to, reach for my weapon, and there was nobody there.
Nobody there at all.
Me, the car was locked. And I've got a buddy that rides with me now that works in our jail. About 2 years ago, one of our ex-chiefs died in the middle of the night. We passed his house. And my friend looks at me, and now he's a jailer, but he does ride along. And he goes, there's something wrong down here. 2 hours later, we were down there working a death scene.
How'd he feel that?
I don't know, but he's done it a couple of times that something was wrong. When he's been in the car with me as a ride along, he's done it a couple of times about there's something going to happen here. There's something wrong with that car there.
Got great intuition.
He's not even a street cop. He's not been to the academy. He works in our jail, but he's real spiritual. And his wife is real spiritual, and so I believe he's got an open door to it too.
All right, thank you, Paul. Do you have that kind of intuition?
I probably don't. I don't. I wouldn't say that I can feel when something bad's going to happen like that. So yeah, I don't think that's one of my gifts.
What has been one of the strangest, not necessarily scariest, but strangest story that somebody's ever reported to you?
Wow, I'd have to think about that. I mean, there's a lot of strange calls that we go on, and probably one that pops into mind that happened early in my career is I was called to a scene of a medical assist, and the dispatcher didn't give a lot of information.
Like a heart attack, anything like that?
Yeah, it could be anything, and sometimes the person's injured and we need to photograph the injuries. And sometimes the police officer had to kick the door in to get in to help a person, and they want pictures of the damage for liability purposes. But on this one, I went in and there, it was an elderly gentleman, and he had a very large growth on his abdomen, and he had decided to perform surgery on himself.
Oh.
And cut a large incision in it.
Like he had a tumor, a stomach tumor.
Yeah, it was a large, I mean, it looked like a big boil or something, just a large fleshy mass on his stomach. It's probably as big as a hockey puck. But he'd tried to do surgery on himself and cut it open, and there was large kind of fibrous material and blood coming out. And I took pictures of that and walked away, and it was really, really bizarre.
Did he kill himself?
No, he survived, and they were able to patch him up. But I had never seen anything so disgusting. And it was early on in my career.
Was he in pain?
Yeah, he was in pain, but he just wanted to perform surgery on himself.
I mean, was he wasn't drunk or anything, was he?
No, I don't think so. I think
he just wanted to cut the thing off.
Yeah, he just was sick of it.
Why did he go to the hospital?
I don't know. Yeah, his neighbors were the ones who called it in.
Maybe you wanted to save some money.
Yeah, that's true.
High cost of medicine these days. Who knows, Way?
Yeah, for sure.
Next up, we go to Angela in Fulton, Missouri. Hey, Angie, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, Angela.
I spent some time in the hospital several years ago, and all my life since I was four, I've been having out-of-body experiences. And during the hospital stay, I had one. I was walking down the hospital, and in some of the rooms, you could see people standing at the foot of very sick people's beds, like waiting for them to go. And they were dressed in different periods of dress, you know, like 20s and 30s, 1930s and stuff. But the one that really caught my eye was a little boy that was about 10 years old in a little tweed suit with a little beret on. And he turned around and looked right at me.
With those eyes.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I'd seen things and heard things, you know, a lot through my life because of the out-of-body experiences, but that was the most profound thing that had ever happened because there were so many spirits, and it was in two different rooms. It wasn't even just in one room. There were spirits standing at the foot of people's beds in two different rooms.
Paul, did you ever come across animal spirits?
I haven't. I haven't heard any stories regarding them either.
How about seasons? I mean, full moon, certain times, do you get more of these reports?
You know, on a full moon, the evidence is kind of, you know, anecdotal that people say on a full moon there's more crime and more visits to the ER, and there is some research that supports it.
I was told by a crime scene cleaner, you know, one of those guys who comes afterwards, they had to clean things up, that during full moons he got more calls.
Yeah, there is. You know, people say that, and there also is some research that does support that. So, you know, that's a whole other ball of wax, but it does seem to affect people.
We go west. We go to Sun City, Arizona, and it's Bill's turn. Go ahead, Bill.
Hello, George and distinguished guest. George, I hope you might remember, and your guest might enjoy this story. Let me know when you remember it. The last time I saw my mother-in-law, she was in the hospital. She had tubes down her throat. She couldn't speak. The day before, I had won $500 in the lottery. Somebody must have told her. So the last thing I remember of my mother-in-law was her sticking a thumbs up and five fingers in the air with the other hand. Do you remember, George?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure do.
So she expired very shortly after. And then about a year later, I was in my kitchen making a midnight snack. And I turned around, and just as clear as day, there she was, and looking as good as she ever did, with five fingers in the air, five fingers up and thumbs up on the other hand. And the very next day, I won $500 in the lottery. That's just too much. But then, another year later, that night that I saw her the first time, my wife was home, and I went and I told her, you know, I just saw your mother, and she did thumbs up and five fingers.
You had a mother-in-law that liked you.
I guess. More than a daughter sometimes, I think. Oh, she said that to the world. At any rate, another year later, I was making another midnight peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And this night, we had a guest staying with us, and I was going to sleep on the couch, and our friend Audrey was going to sleep in bed with my wife. And they were getting ready for bed when I saw my mother-in-law again. And I went in, and I told my wife, I just saw your mother again. She did thumbs up and five fingers. And Audrey yelled at me. She thought I was being cruel. And the next day, I won $500 in the lottery.
How about that? What an ominous number for you, but a good one.
I love that story.
That is a good
story. George, thanks for everything. Thank you, distinguished guest, for your service, too.
Absolutely. Paul, what do you do next? I mean, what's on your agenda these days?
Well, I'm still doing some writing. I'm working on the sequel and the third in the series for The Lost Stones. Keeping busy there and just staying busy with kids and work and trying to do the best I can.
Health good? You're happy?
Yep, I'm doing well.
Good. Let's go to Daniel, Tampa Bay. That's, of course, in Florida. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hey, you know what? I've never really been like a big believer in the super spiritual ghost realm, but I feel like I'm developing that now.
It's coming. Why? How come?
Well, a couple of years ago, and I dismissed it, a few years ago, actually. I was about 13, and I lived out in the middle of nowhere on a horse farm in Indiana. And I just went around walking one night like I usually do. It was like 2 in the morning. I was behind one of my neighbor's barns, and I was just standing there leaning against the wall smoking, which I should not have been doing at 13.
No.
And I remember looking out into the field in front of me. It was really dark, kind of foggy, and I saw this, I don't know how to describe it, like a, almost like a red mist, but like it just a little bitty blur, and it looked like it was going back and forth fairly quickly in the field, and then all of a sudden I saw the thing just come straight at me, and then I felt this weird like adrenaline rush, like as if it hit me, and then I just stood there dumbfounded. I didn't know what had happened. I was too scared to move. I was like 2 miles from my house, and I knew that I didn't just want to run home because I was in the middle of nowhere. I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know if that was something that had ever happened before, or I don't know.
You do get these feelings once in a while. You get frozen and everything. Have you ever had that feeling of pure panic fear, Paul?
I haven't. Not involved with a ghost story or things like that.
Oh, that's good. You've been lucky.
Yeah, yeah. I hope I just can hear the stories. I don't really want a haunting to happen.
No,
to me.
I don't blame you. Let's go to Stockton, California. Dustin's with us, first-time caller. Hi, Dustin. Go ahead.
Hi, howdy. I got a ghost story for you.
Alrighty.
Actually, I debunked it myself. It's
you
one of those
debunked
things.
It? Okay.
Yes. I was stationed on the John C. Stennis at the time. I was on the 2-6 shutdown roving watch. We're in port. Everything's shut down. I'm a safety watch. Well, you're doing your rounds, and every time I'd cross this one space where you can literally see from the port side bulkhead to the starboard side bulkhead. Every time you'd walk down this and look, and you turn a right, you'd see this black image, kind of not really a figure, but you just see this blackness go across with you as you turn. And of course, you double take. What the heck was that? You know, and you. It's a creepy place in the middle of a aircraft carrier, especially at night. The ventilation's going. You're all kinds of stuff.
Sure, anything could happen.
Yeah, you see caution tags, you know, flapping in the wind and all that.
Anyways, I got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, well, finally, I stopped and stared. I want to see if this is going to do it again. I look away. It happens again. I look. It happens again. It's. I'm seeing the negative of this bright white steam piping, bright white lagging pace. It's almost reflective.
What was it?
It's, you know, when you stare at a bright object, you close your eyes, you see the negative?
Yeah.
That's what it was.
That's what you were looking at?
It was the trail of this white, you know, you stare at a white object. When you look away, you'll see the negative of it in your eyes. That's what it was. As you turn, I'm seeing this black image of this white pipe.
Ha, how about that? Hey, my friend Paul, thanks again for being on the program. Maybe we see you sooner than a year?
Yeah, that would be great. I got more stories.
So. You got it. Paul Ramosh, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, we talk a little bit about communicating with animals on Coast to Coast AM.